Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Nothing from Nothing, a 1970s hit from piano player, singer Billy Preston, born on this day in 1946.
Is he really the fifth Beatle?
You know, he's one of the many who claim. You know, you have Brian Epstein, the manager.
Yeah.
You got George Martin, the producer. But Billy Preston, if you watch the Beatles Get Back, big documentary thing that's on
is that Peter Jackson?
Yeah, Peter Jackson did, which is all like this incredible footage they made during the sort of the sessions to record the Let It Be album. Billy Preston is pretty prominent in that, so it's pretty cool to watch him there.
Did you like that documentary? Air quotes doc. I don't know if I'd call it a doc or what. I guess it is.
I mean, you're like just sitting in the studio with like John Lennon and Paul McCartney and George Harrison and Ringo Starr while they're literally writing the. Like, they're writing songs. You're watching Paul McCartney write Get Back. And so, if you care about, like, pop music or that band, or if you care about that in particular, like, it's kind of fascinating stuff.
I liked the studio stuff. Then when it became the, like, how are we going to debut the album, that was when I lost interest. But the studio stuff I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, to me it's the process of songwriting. Just sitting around jamming and playing around and just sort of watching these songs materialize in real time. I mean, there's not a lot of footage like that. There's concert footage in the world, but there's not a lot of footage of literally you see the song as it is being written and conceived, you know? That moment of creation, it's not captured on film very often.
Is Tucson in Arizona? I did like that. Like, they were trying to, like, find things like fit the meter, like, whatnot.
Right.
And then we talked about on Some Kind of Monster when Kirk is just buying horses because that's what rich people do. When George Harrison just figures out about taxes, that was also laugh out loud funny to me. He's like, wait, they just take my money? Yeah, it's kind of how it works. A couple of things I wanted to discuss as we follow up from Friday that you spoke with Drew. Did y'all go to the Minnesota State Fair?
We did. We spent all day at the fair. Got like 20,000 steps or whatever in. Probably not that much, but quite a bit. So ate a lot of food. Ate some cheese curds. Didn't get the bucket of cookies. We got the towering cup of cookies.
Okay.
With ice cold milk. Vanilla ice cream cone in the dairy building. Real big fan of a frozen apple cider pop from the agricultural building, like from fresh Minnesota apples. That was good.
Did they have rides as well? Because you went with your son, right?
Yeah, but my son is like taller than me. Like, you know, he's 15 and he's 6'5". And so we weren't. Last year when we went, we did like the whatever they call it, like the ski lifty thing.
Yeah.
And they sort of cranks you over the top of everything. And we didn't do any of the rides this year. We're not that interested in the makeshift, like, carnival ride stuff.
Were the only attractions for y'all food? Because if so, I respect that.
You know, we went and looked at the horses and looked at the goats and lots of wildlife. We went in the agricultural building and looked at, like, the scarecrow exhibit and the giant pumpkin. The biggest pumpkin was 1,500 pounds. So we looked at, like, big vegetables. We really wanted to look at the seed art. But the seed art is a thing, and they closed the loophole where you can sneak in the back way to look at the seed art, so you have to stand in line, and I think it was like an hour-long line to look at seed art.
Isn't Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts, he's from Minnesota originally, right? Is that where the giant pumpkin actually, like, originates?
Oh, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know about that. But, yeah, you know the fiberglass tigers all around you,
yeah.
All around Memphis? They do that with Snoopy's here. I don't know how many of them still exist, but at one point 20-something years ago, they did the same kind of thing with Snoopy's because of Charles Schulz from the Twin Cities. Yeah.
Yeah, I was now making that connection. Okay, the other thing I wanted to follow up with you, have you done your fantasy football draft yet?
I got it tonight. You got some tips for me?
All right, so are you snake drafting or auction drafting?
So it's a snake draft. I think it's going to be a 16-team league. It's non-PPR. It's individual defensive players. There's a lot going on.
Okay. I mean, honestly, I know Micah Parsons is the story right now, but, man, when I hear the guy's getting, like, an epidural in his back, it makes me worry a little bit. So from the individual defensive perspective, I mean, if it's non-PPR and it's a 16-team league, you're literally...
Where do you draft the quarterback? That's my question. If you look at, like, general mock, like, the best quarterbacks are going in, like, the fourth round... I assume in a 16-team non-PPR, the good quarterbacks would go higher, right?
So,
or am I wrong?
I would say good quarterback versus good fantasy quarterback's a different thing. What I would say is the quarterbacks that are going to run the football, that's when, like, if you're taking Lamar and Josh, or probably even Hurts, okay, well, the fourth round makes sense, but if you're taking somebody like Joe Burrow, I'm not taking Joe Burrow in the fourth round, even though I think he's, like, arguably the best quarterback. I probably wouldn't take Mahomes in general. If it's a 16-team non-PPR, the real thing is, like, man, you just got to hit your running back because, like,
okay.
There's going to be such a value. Like, there's such a value of getting the running back right.
Okay. That was my question. So relative to, like, your random, you know, rankings you see on websites, who is more or less valuable in my league? If you tell me the good running back, that's where the real premium is.
So I'm lower on McCaffrey from simply because whenever I hear, for the same reason of talking about Parsons, you know, with the epidural, McCaffrey went over to Germany and had to do the blood platelet thing. That gives me a lot of concern. I mean, there's always going to be the question of, can Saquon do it again? I tend to think yes. I really think Derrick Henry's safe. I like Kyren Williams from the Rams because I think the Rams are always able to run the football. Bucky Irving from the Bucks is going to be a good pick because I think he's going to be a feature back. Like, those are kind of the guys that I'd lock in on.
So more so than Deshaun Robinson. What about Jahmyr Gibbs? Jahmyr Gibbs is the kind of guy, back when I did fantasy, I would try to draft.
Yeah.
Like, I always like to get the running backs in, like, that year two, three, four, before they've had like the big 300 carry seasons and before they get older. I used to try to target those kind of guys.
So Bijan is, I think you could put Bijan in the category of the pretty safe because even if he's not dominating on the ground, they're going to feature him so much. The one thing I worry about with Gibbs is the Lions are replacing all their coordinators. They've lost key offensive linemen. I still think that those two guys are safe. Really, the only no-touch guy for me right now, and I'm happy to be wrong, is I just would avoid McCaffrey.
All right. Injury risk. I worry about that. I'm going to get, like, the ninth pick or whatever. I'm going to look up and, like, he's the best running back available and whatever. And I'm also wary of, like, the older injury stuff on running backs. But you think Henry's safe?
I do, simply because, like, it's a downhill running attack. And then when Lamar's your quarterback, everybody has to be aware of Lamar. And so for the first time in Derrick Henry's career, he's not running against, like, eight-man boxes where everybody's just, like, they have to play it more honestly when Lamar's your quarterback.
All right. Give me a later round quarterback. If I don't get any of the top six guys and I wait on quarterback, who should I be targeting?
I like Baker because Baker throws it a ton, and I kind of like their weapons. I like Goff late. Really, Baker. Like, if you really want to wait, like, to me, Baker's a guy I wait on because he puts up unbelievable numbers.
See, I'm using this primarily as a mechanism to get back into football.
Yes.
More so than try to win the league. So I'm sort of a Packers fan, so I may have a hard time not waiting and taking Jordan Love in, like, the eighth round or something like that.
Yes. I mean, my thing with Love is, like, he's athletic enough that they can do stuff. Like, I don't know. There's weeks where I watch and I'm like, I think this guy's unbelievable. And then there's other weeks where you watch him and you're just like, man, I'm not sure. But in terms of fantasy, that's probably not a bad way to go, especially when you're starting to get into those, like, late rounds, and it's just kind of like, all right, this is a guy that's very mobile, very athletic, and he's going to have weapons that they're trusting with. So,
well, I definitely want to get at least a few players on teams I plan to watch, because, again, I'm doing this to help me, like, get back into football. And so I'm going to have to get some Packers and Vikings, because those are the teams I'm going to be watching more.
Yeah, I also, if people are dropping Addison because of the suspension, I still like Addison.
Right.
I still very much like Mason, the running back. I think Josh Jacobs, I believe in with the Packers.
All right.
Yeah, those are kind of the guys.
All right.
Now you
got
to
go now.
I'm like an all or I'm an all or nothing fantasy. Like, I'm either the guy that, like, is in it in the league, like, and can win every year, or I'm like the worst team because I usually go very, like, high risk, high reward.
My thing with fantasy leagues across all sports, across all years of my life, is that I love the draft. So I over prepare. And then once the season starts, I undermanage.
Yes.
That's kind of my thing.
Because I enjoy the putting a team together more than I do the week to week.
That's 100%. That's me. I used to be the guy who would show up at the baseball draft with my copy of Baseball Prospectus.
Yep.
And like, this guy wrote a book. What's going on? But then, like, if my team's bad, I stop paying attention after 2 months.
You know? Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that was always my problem with fantasy baseball. Is like, yeah, you could get me in February and March and, like, I'm into it, but it's like, come the middle of April, I'm like, all right, I'm already done here.
Yes.
All right, couple other things I wanted to discuss with you. So we've got the Hall of Fame this weekend with Carmelo and Howard being the prominent NBA guys. This was a half-baked thought that I had, and I wanted to run it by you. Kevin Durant's legacy outside of Golden State is kind of weak in the terms of the level that he's at. But at the same time, it's like you can't just dismiss it because that's the prime of his career. But I think that's what I've always struggled with Durant is like, how do you weigh the fact that so much of the resume and so much of the accolades come from that period of time where it's like he went and joined the best team that was already ready made?
Well, one thing about Durant is he did win an MVP, and he won an MVP before Golden State.
Yes.
And he got to a finals.
And he got to a finals.
Right. So he won an MVP and got to a finals before the Golden State. Not many players in NBA history have actually won MVPs because a lot of multiple MVP winners. So So the list of guys who have won actual league MVPs is not that long, and they're basically all Hall of Famers except for Derrick Rose, whose career got ruined by injury. And there's also the list of the guys who have been the best player on a finals team is also not super long. And the list of guys who have done both is basically all Hall of Famers. Like, find me a guy who's won an MVP and been the best player on a team in the NBA Finals who's not a Hall of Famer. I don't think it exists. And so Kevin Durant's a Hall of Famer. But I do think there's a question historically. I think he's someone who people thought was going to be, like, a potential top 10 all-time player. Like, he was right behind LeBron. And, like, I think historically he's been passed by Steph Curry historically. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, he'll probably be passed by Nikola Jokic if he hasn't already. And so he's the guy who's going to be a top 25 player maybe in league history, but it's not going to be quite what it was supposed to be, you know?
I've always just kind of wound up thinking, like, to go to your quasi-Packers fandom, he's the closest thing to me to, like, Aaron Rodgers, where when you watch him play, it's undeniable. The talent, the way that they can do things that you don't see other people can do, it's jaw-dropping. But when you put the whole resume together, like, you just sit there and go, why didn't this guy do more considering how incredibly gifted you think the person is?
That's actually a fantastic cross-sport comp. Like, that's really great because Aaron Rodgers, to me, like, prime Aaron Rodgers, it might be my favorite quarterback ever.
If your team was playing him, it was the scariest thing. When he would take that deep drop and let the, like, do the crow hop and then let it rip, you just knew it's like, all right, here comes an 80-yard bomb. This is going to be something you can't stop.
I thought just in terms of watching a quarterback play football, Aaron Rodgers was, like, the most thrilling guy to watch play in his
Completely
time.
Agree.
Not anymore. And Durant is kind of like that, too. Like just no one had ever been as smooth of a scorer at that size as him before. And I don't know. I mean, Rodgers has won, I think, multiple MVPs, right? In the NFL,
yes.
And maybe, one Super Bowl?
Three in a Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah, and so it's another thing where it's like an all-time talent with a great resume, but as great as her resume is, it's not quite the level of the all-time talent. I think that's a fair comp.
Four MVPs and a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and four MVPs is pretty strong. But yeah.
But one
Super Bowl for a guy like that, but just like him in his prime, man, watching him run and sling and like, because I'm not a guy, I'm trying to, you know, get acclimated to the way the game has changed, you know? I'm not a fan of the quote-unquote running quarterback, but I've always liked mobile quarterbacks.
Growing up
in the 80s, I was more of a Montana guy than like a Marino Fouts guy. I like the guy who can like move a little bit, but I'm not looking for guys who are trying to run. And so that Aaron Rodgers type, so like that creativity like outside the pocket is something I always responded to.
Yeah,
I always like watching Brett Favre for the same reason.
It's guys that extend the play to make plays down the field. It's why I also love Burrow. Like, Burrow is athletic, but he really isn't trying to run. He's trying to extend the play so that he can make the big play. And that's kind of like where the excitement comes in.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, we've got fish on deck, so we're going to let you go. But at some point, maybe we'll talk the NBA.
All right. Talk to you later.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. We come back. It's Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, actually on Tuesday. We'll do that next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, and the author, three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap. Recipient of the 3-time recipient of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing.
3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award, 6-time
were those stories for
finalist.
6-time final, were those stories for Fast Company stories? You used to work
those
for Fast Company.
Fast Company stories. Fast Company magazine still exists, both print and digital.
Is it still a great workplace magazine? It was.
Absolutely.
I knew it at one time. I didn't know, but I follow it less
fact,
now that you're
there. We're going to cite a Fast Company story this very morning.
That'll be exciting.
As we range across the U.S. economy.
That'll be very exciting for the people. Anyway, let me finish the introduction. And a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand joins me from Washington, D.C. Why did you ask me, before the show began, you asked me how many times I've moved? Is that right? You asked me how many times you've moved.
Yes. In your life.
Okay. Yeah. So.
Are we starting there? Is that where we're going to start?
That's fine. Does going to college count as moving?
I counted it as moving.
But only once.
From home to college, right.
Okay.
The fact that you move from building to building college.
Okay, fine. So fine. I moved once from home to college.
Weren't you born in Boston?
No. The story was this.
You were born in Buffalo.
The first 7 kids were born in Boston. Well, some were born in Baltimore, where my parents did their medical training, and then they were in Boston. The first 7 kids were born in up there. And mom had 7 kids. They had donkeys and horses and whatever else. And my dad, he decided to interview for a job. Living in Boston, he was on the faculty at Harvard Medical School, all of that. He decides to interview for a job in Buffalo and take it. And this was at a time, 1960, 61, when you didn't really consult your wife. You just did it, right? And so the story goes, so depressed about having to move to Buffalo that she needed
another project.
And I, therefore, was conceived in Boston and born as soon as we got to Buffalo in September. We moved in like June. I was born in September. So I lived my entire life, it's lucky, in one house. Do you count moving from house to house in Memphis as moves or not? Or are we talking about just cities, relocating cities?
Well, the way the data is, if you're moving, if you're moving from house to house in Memphis, that is, those are moves.
What's the topic? What are we dealing with here? What's the topic?
Well, the topic is you haven't finished counting.
I know. You tell me the topic while I count.
The topic is that U.S. families are moving at the lowest level in recorded history, going back to the turn of the last century, the late 1900s, early 20th century. In that era, around 1900, the vast majority of Americans lived within 25 miles of the place they were born when they died. But one of the things that characterizes the American economy is mobility. Americans are willing to pick up, like your mother and father did, and move everybody for a better job or for a job that opens up better opportunities. And,
so we're talking about moving locations, not just house to house then. That's what we're talking about.
We're talking about both.
This struck me.
So how many times have you moved?
Well, if you just count place to place, forget how many, then three more houses in Memphis.
Okay, place to place, right?
Eight.
Okay.
I moved eight times.
Okay.
And
if I count place to place, we moved once inside Raleigh from one house to another.
If
you count place to place for me, it's nine times. If you start after I arrived in Miami in first grade, if you count the three moves between age zero and six, when my father was training,
Jeffrey, how many times have you? Jeffrey's moved twice. Once 12. To California. Ole Miss, and then here, right?
North Carolina.
So, what was North Carolina?
Jeffrey's moved.
So after graduating college, I moved back here for like 3 months, and then I had the food job in North Carolina.
And the food job was in North Carolina. Here's my question, Charles, because
that's four times?
Correct.
Total.
So,
but Jeffrey's young. What is Jeffrey?
37.
32 or something?
No, I just turned 37.
Okay. So U.S. families are moving at the lowest level on record. Here's the numbers. In the 1960s and 70s, 20% of Americans moved each year. That includes moves, the census tracks this within counties, within states, and state to state. That included people moving within the same county. But one in five families moving every year is a lot of moving, even if you include local moves. By the pandemic, it was 10%. So it had already been cut in half between 1979 and 2019. Last year and the year before, 2023 and 2024, 7.8% of families moved. So almost cut by two-thirds. And there's lots of reasons, but it's down significantly even from 2019. And why is that? I mean, the big reason is housing prices, right?
Right.
Americans are stuck. The people who have good mortgages, like maybe you don't, but I have a really good mortgage because we bought this house in 2013. If we were to move and try and buy this same house again, we could not afford it. It would be crazy. Our mortgage, the price of our mortgage would double. So if you have a good mortgage, even if your family's growing, even if you bought the house when your kids were 7 and 5, and now they're 12 and 10 or 14 and 12, and the house feels small, you can't buy the house you want because of mortgage rates. House prices have never come back down after the pandemic. So house prices are they are the least affordable they've been in years. That locks people in. And now, here's the fast company story. You know, we had years of what was called job hopping. Starting in the pandemic and post-pandemic, employees were the thing. Could you get somebody to do the work you needed done? And quit rates were high. We measure how many people quit their jobs every month. And there was job hopping. People who quit their jobs and got a new job, their pay went up two or three times the pace of the pay of people who stayed in their jobs. Now, as of July, the consulting firm Korn Ferry has come up with a new term called job hugging. I love that, job hugging. People are hanging on to their jobs with both hands because they don't want to have to move. There's a lot of economic uncertainty, even though the stock market's at an all-time high. We feel a little shaky. And also, the job market is soft. So if you quit, are you going to be able to find a new job? So job hugging leads to people not moving, right?
So anyway. So okay, one of these things that strikes me about this, these are all bad things, right? Obviously. They're signs that people are not, if people aren't moving houses, because they can't, because they're stuck in their house, or because they're hugging their job because they're nervous, neither of those is a good thing. I want to go back, though, to this idea of American mobility, because one of the things that struck me, one of my moves was to Australia. I spent a year in Australia studying in Australia. And one of the things that struck me then was that almost everyone in Australia, if you grew up and you went to university, you went to the university in your town, right? You went to the university. It wouldn't occur to anyone if they grew up in Victoria to go to the University of New South Wales or to the University of Perth. They went to, and you know what else they did? They lived with the people. And they live in the town where they grew up, fundamentally.
Where they grew up.
And it does strike me. It did then, and it does still now, that the idea of that we just up and rootlessly move anywhere where is not necessarily a better way to live. Like if you grow up in the same town, if you then grow up and then you stay in the town where you have community and you have family to support you as you raise your family, that strikes me as a more sensible way to grow up than the American, well, I'll go anywhere and just pursue anything. And who cares about extended family and community and whatever? This is something that I've thought about. I don't think, like, I've loved Memphis. I've had a great time in Memphis. But I think my life would have been easier. And those people who have stayed and lived their lives in Memphis probably experienced this had they had family around.
I don't disagree. I mean, I grew up in Miami. I'm one of four. None of us live in Miami. But my mom still does. My dad's passed away. So taking care of my mom
Hard. The rootlessness.
In the most loving way is very, very, very difficult. It often involves 97 text messages a day with my sister. But also my mom and dad didn't experience being grandparents every day firsthand because they visited their grandchildren. They didn't live with them. So I agree with you. At the same time, I'm not sure how that would work.
It's not the way we do the American economy. What really matters, of course, is, and this isn't the subject for today, is my suspicion is economic mobility vertically has been substantially changed as well. But that's a topic for another day. All right, let's move on.
Anyway, let me give you the final two stats.
Yeah,
Some of this is family culture. 58% of U.S. adults, 58% of adults now live in the state where they were born. That is not true of you or I.
No.
That is down from 70% in 1940. The peak was 1940. I suspect that's not true. I suspect the peak was 1840. But the modern peak was 70% in 1940, just before World War I, 58. So it's still true that in the end, most people migrate, either stay home or migrate back home. Okay, what's next?
I want to go to the really important story of the day. McDonald's value meal expanded.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. More and more Americans turn to credit cards to get by. National Debt Relief is helping qualified clients reduce what they owe. For many, continuing to struggle, making minimum monthly payments, could take years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, visit nationaldebtrelief.com today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. To find out what savings you may qualify for, simply visit nationaldebtrelief.com. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Yeah, I listened to the McDonald's CEO talk about this today, and I confess I couldn't really figure it out. But today, nationwide, there's going to be a $5 value meal. And an $8 value meal. The $8 value meal is the Big Mac value meal, and the $5 value meal, I think, is breakfast. That's my sense.
But this isn't an earnings call. Why are they doing this?
No, this was not an earnings call. This was the CEO of McDonald's appearing on CNBC for 20 minutes to talk about his business. And here's the reason. He said we have completely bifurcated experiences with people. The lower income, middle and lower income people are simply skipping coming to breakfast, and they're trading down, and they're trying to find ways of paying less. It is interesting that $8 counts as a value meal, right? It's not a $6 value meal. I mean, you can still go to Chili's and sit down and have a server come to your table, a waiter
not for $8
come to your table for $11 for their cheeseburger. And then you got a tip and whatever. But $8 is the value meal at for the Big Mac. So that's fine. I mean, you and I talked about the fact that I bought one Subway sub sandwich with no drink and no chips, and it was $12. So in that context, $8 is good, but. But McDonald's is the sort of leader of, they're the opposite of Walmart. They have priced themselves out of their customers' comfort level. You go to McDonald's and you think, holy mackerel, we bought lunch for two adults and it cost $21. How did that happen? And that's that's not the kind of sticker shock you want your customers.
When you say bifurcated experience, what do you mean?
They said, he said explicitly, we have menu items for rich people. I don't even know what they are because I'm not that experienced with McDonald's menu. He said, and we see high income people. There is no throttle on what they spend at McDonald's, and low income people, we're losing them as customers, or they're trading down to keep the total cost of their bill in line.
One of the pieces that struck me, and I should have referred it to you, maybe we'll talk about it next week, is I think it was in the New York Times, did a story about Disney. And how Disney, we're just talking about bifurcated experiences. They're two Americas increasingly. There's the incredibly rich America.
It was the New York Times explaining a family that went to Disney and they had saved for a year.
Right.
And
they didn't have
the
anything.
Story was heartbreaking.
They didn't have anything close to the access. It used to be that literally Walt Disney, the human being, they talked about literally that it doesn't matter if you're a CEO or whatever else, a teacher, or you're going to have the same magical experience at Disney. And that's the way they pitched themselves, and that's the way they ran it. And now it could not be further from the truth. Now they absolutely, if you are not an upper middle class Disney, you really have a hard family. You have a hard time having the Disney experience. And it is, if you're a rich person, it is so much a different experience than they reserve lots of the spots.
You don't have to stand in line.
Yeah,
you don't have to stand in line.
But also they reserve the spots for the, you can't even get spots on the ride if you don't have pay these exorbitant prices. So,
And for the ordinary person, I don't even think this is right, but the base price to get into Disney is $100 per person per day. So a family of four, you know, just walking in the door, no food, nothing, $400.
And that's before you pay the $43 extra dollars to get on the ride that you want to get on or whatever else for each person. Right. Anyway, we didn't talk about that story. Okay, moving on to other matters. One thing, I'll talk about tariffs here in a minute, but we mentioned glancingly at the end of last week that you have a cover story on the moon economy at National Geographic.
I try and frame everything through the economy, including the moon, which is empty and has no economy.
Right. Explain to me. You told me this wonderful story about something called regolith and how they're going to mine regolith and they're going to zap it here and then zap stuff back to Earth. And then what? Give me that. You know the example I'm talking about? Were they sending energy back? What the hell were they sending back to Earth?
Well,
story.
There's no one on the moon now. Let's be clear.
Right.
And the only people who've ever landed there are Americans. There's this wave of exploration of the moon. And the question is, are we going to go back to the moon in a semi-permanent way? You know, we have research stations in all kinds of places. We have a huge set of research stations in Antarctica, which is at least as hard a place in some ways to live as the moon. In some ways it's harder. The question is, are we going back to the moon for good, or are we just going back again to kind of look around, kick the dirt, bring some stuff back, plant some flags, and then leave? And National Geographic literally called me up because of the wonderful book, which if you haven't read it, you should go get it, called One Giant Leap. It will make your fall so much richer, about what going to the moon was like the first time. And they said, not what is going to the moon look like in 2032, you know, 10 years from now, but look out 60 years. If things work out in 2070, what will the moon look like? And that, by the way, that ding was a text about taking care of my mother in Miami. And there's a second one. And the answer is, if the moon can provide things that we need, if it has an economic reason to be there, then we will be there. And if it can't, then
why would we possibly do something on the moon if we could do it here? Give me an example.
So the most persuasive, there's two persuasive examples. One is, you use the moon as a way station for lots of other space exploration, because you could literally set up a catapult on the moon, a sophisticated electric railgun catapult, and fire projectiles into orbit with no rocket fuel. You could just use solar power. The gravity on the moon is low enough that you could literally launch things into orbit like bricks of regolith, like bricks of moon dirt, right into orbit without any rocket fuel. That's how.
Just
that's
for fun? Because it's fun to launch dirt things into orbit?
Inexpensive it is to launch things. No, regolith, moon dirt, is composed of 40% silicon and I think 20% oxygen. So you can literally melt moon dirt, which looks like nothing but coarse gray gravel, really unappealing stuff,
yeah.
Very sharp edged, no weathering. You can melt it and make solar panels right there on the moon. You can make the silicon and the glass, and then you've got oxygen as kind of a quote unquote waste product, as a byproduct. And you know what you need oxygen for? People to breathe and rocket fuel. Oxygen is one half of rocket fuel. So the idea would be that you would mine regolith on the moon, launch it into orbit. Robotic factories would simply melt the regolith and robotically make solar panels, huge solar panels. And then you would transport the solar panels from moon orbit to Earth orbit and beam solar power down to the Earth. And solar panels in Earth orbit are 8 times more efficient. You get 8 times as much power for the same area of solar panel as you do on the ground. The only reason we don't use orbiting solar panels right now is that launching 100 tons of solar panels into orbit is so expensive that despite how much solar power you get back, you might as well just build them on Earth. But if you can build them on the moon with stuff from the moon, so all you're launching is the stuff to make the factory, and then beam the solar power back to Earth. And yes, you can beam it back to Earth without zapping anybody.
I imagine to listeners, this sounds like total fantasy. Are there serious people who talk about that scenario seriously?
Jeff Bezos's company, Blue Origin, is using what's called simulated regolith. We know exactly what moon dirt is made out of. They mix up exactly that composition, and they are literally melting it on Earth, admittedly. They're figuring out how to do it. They're using solar power and robotic systems to turn it into solar panels right here on Earth. You gotta do it. You gotta experiment with it to see if you can do it. They're getting ready. They're clearly getting ready, not next year or even in 2031, but they're getting ready to become the electric power utility of the moon by building solar. You tell them you're going to be there in 18 months and need this much power, they'll build the solar power. So,
by the way, are we the only people who have been to the moon? Has anyone else been to the moon?
No other nation has landed people on the moon. Russia and China and India have landed robotic probes. But let me tell you the most exciting thing. The story begins with this most exciting vision. The moon is a great place to do science.
Okay.
Specifically, astronomy, astrophysics. And the story opens with a guy named Joe Silk, who's a legendary cosmologist. He spent his life studying the cosmos, studying space, explaining that we could build a telescope on the moon that could look at some nearby solar systems. His candidate is TRAPPIST-1, 40 light years away. And you could build a telescope powerful enough to see if there is life on the planets of TRAPPIST-1 just by aiming the telescope at that sun and planets. It's got 6 planets. He said, if they turn the lights out at night, if they turn the lights out at night, they are not an advanced civilization. If they turn their lights on at night, you would be able to see the lights flickering on the planet. That's how good the telescope would be. And I didn't believe him, and then I called 14 other cosmologists.
Is it because you can have a better telescope on the moon? Is that why?
You can have the atmosphere of the Earth, the air limits what you can see. And there's no atmosphere on the moon to speak of. So you could build an optical telescope of unlimited magnification using not one big mirror, but 60 small manageable mirrors acting as a single mirror. And to me, I said to Joe Silk, if this is really true, why wouldn't we do this tomorrow? Like, let's go build a cool telescope on the moon and aim it at TRAPPIST-1. Now, the problem is that that telescope requires power and computers and digital links to the Earth and infrastructure to make sure the each of the mirrors is aimed precisely and kept in that location. And the rest of the moon economy, like Blue Origin making solar panels, will create the infrastructure to do that. You couldn't go into the middle of the Gobi Desert and build a spectacular advanced telescope without lots of support from other places.
So anyway, read the piece at the National Geographic. I need to get the
story at Barnes & Noble. Get the issue at Barnes & Noble or online.
Tariffs, cool real feature. Quick. Cool tariffs, feature. First tomato tariffs, and then the tariffs. Here's the interesting thing. All these tariffs, not all of them, have been ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge, but that decision But that decision has been stayed until the Supreme Court can weigh in. What's
11 happened? Judges reviewed the Trump tariffs on appeal from a trade court said they were unconstitutional. That was a 3-judge panel. This is an 11-judge panel. They voted 7-4, mixed vote. Some Trump judges voted against the tariffs. The lead dissent was written by an Obama judge saying, no, they are constitutional. 7-4, unconstitutional. This is 70% of the tariffs. This is the quote unquote reciprocal tariffs, including the 10% base tariff on every nation in the world. And this is clearly going to be appealed to the Supreme Court, although the plaintiff, the lawyer for the plaintiff, said this morning on CNBC, why doesn't the Trump administration just honor the decision 7-4 that they're unconstitutional? The Constitution specifically says Congress has the power to levy tariffs, not the president, and just go to Congress and get Congress to pass the tariffs. The Congress is Republican. Anyway, the decision is suspended until October. You're going to pay your tariffs on all of your Halloween decorations. The interesting thing is that if the tariffs are ruled unconstitutional, people are already talking about whether the tariff money that has been collected
has to be refunded.
It's $1 billion.
Tell me about tomatoes real quick in 5 seconds, because then we got to get to Jeffrey to tell us what else is happening.
There's a special new tariff on Mexican tomatoes of 17%, raises your $3.99 pound of tomatoes to $4.65, ostensibly to protect American tomato farmers from Mexican imports. Here's the problem.
What?
70% of U.S. tomatoes come from Mexico, and almost 100% of tomatoes in grocery stores come from Mexico. U.S. tomatoes go into things like sauces and canned tomatoes.
All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. See you on the moon.
You can't grow a tomato in 3 days.
See you later. We really got to go. Thank you, Charles. On Twitter, he's still talking, ladies and gentlemen, on Twitter at C. Fishman or Charles Fishman or something like that. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeffers, what's coming next on Jason and John? Jessica Benson joins their program. Tim Murray with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
All right, we got to get out of here. Back in tomorrow. For now, work is done.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. More and more Americans turn to credit cards to get by. National Debt Relief is helping qualified clients reduce what they owe. For many, continuing to struggle making minimum monthly payments could take years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, visit nationaldebtrelief.com today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. To find out what savings you may qualify for, simply visit nationaldebtrelief.com. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.